Dave Carney, WKTY La Crosse, 96.7 FM, 580 AM. Hope you are having a very good start to your morning. It is going to be a scorcher today, about 94 degrees in La Crosse and surrounding areas with a slight chance of thunderstorms. Bob Ibeck, one of our favorite weekly guests, is joining this morning. Bob, top of the morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great, David. I had a chance to go to a ball game yesterday, first time this year to see the Rays in person. And, of course, they lost that tough game in 10 innings with that stupid rule. Let's start a guy on second base and do a dipsy do. You know, I hate that rule, but at least they came back. It was a one-sided affair, 7-2, going the last three frames. But the Rays rallied and actually had a chance to go ahead 8-7, but failed. But it was a good ball game. But I was talking to my son because he was with me at the game. He was up there scouting. And we were talking about, I said, why are they bringing in this kid, Mazza, who they only brought up for the one game from Durham? Because he had an 8 points up in ERA, right. His dad. We got to let Yarborough go is up to 90 innings today. Not 90 innings, but nine innings if we can, 90 pitches. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, our bullpen's worn out. We're going to Seattle. And if we got to throw away this game, we have to now with Klasnow being down. And I said, yeah, that's going to have ripple effects not only in your ball club but throughout baseball. And I know we want to talk about that this morning.
Yeah, Bob, that's exactly what I do want to talk about this morning. I've got a number of different thoughts working on this particular situation. Tyler Glasnow, the star pitcher for the Tampa Bay Rays and one of their big-ticket guys, one of their very few big-ticket guys, made no bones about why he thinks his UCL is injured, and you said to me off air a couple of days ago it'll probably be about 10 weeks that he'll be gone. Major League Baseball is to blame, according to Tyler Glasnow, because they are doing something quite unprecedented, changing up the rules of the game in the middle of the season. And I think that he's on to something. I'm of the opinion, Bob, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, that might be attacked by Major League Baseball right now to try to drive a wedge between the players, because the batters are like, yes, get rid of it. The pitchers are saying, hey, man, you can't do this to me in the middle of the season. Those things, if they do happen, if the pitchers and the batters, essentially, if they start getting in fighting, that might work in Major League Baseball's favor. But, I mean, the fact that they're changing this in the middle of the season, Bob, is quite curious.
Yeah, that was Tyler's point. I don't think he brought it across as well as I would have hoped he would when he had that interview. Because I know what he was trying to say. You don't change the rules in the middle of the season, okay? And you don't go ahead and throw this out there. Because I got to thinking, if let's just say you go out to and you throw out a catcher in the middle of a ball game because they feel he's loading it up for the pitcher, okay?
Okay.
Putting the stuff on the ball. You eject him. He's gone from the game. Now he is out of the ball game. Most clubs only carry two catchers. What happens later on in a ball game if the other catcher gets hurt? Now, you're going to finish a ball game with a third baseman or a second baseman or an outfielder coming in the ninth or tenth inning of a game to go ahead and could decide, you know, the positioning of the ball club later on in the season in the standings and force that club into using a guy that's not behind the plate. And then, God forbid, he gets hurt. I mean, because he's not used to catching.
Right.
You've put the talented Major League Baseball players in jeopardy of their health. And I think this guy, this commissioner Manfred, somebody needs to go ahead and shake him around, because I'm not for some of the rule changes he's done. Okay. I don't like the second base, starting a guy at second base in the 10th inning or the 11th inning or whatever. The ball club hasn't earned that position at second base to start the game there, nor has it put the other team at a disadvantage who's having to defense against it. And I saw it again yesterday when I was up to watch the Rays game, which they lost in 10 innings to the White Sox. And the White Sox are a really good ball club. I'd have to think right now they might even be a pinch better than the Rays because of their starting rotation. But going back to what you're saying about Tyler, had I been his PR director ahead of time, I would have. And I know he was voicing this because he says he only put the stuff on his arms. It was the suntan lotion. You could see it the night on Monday night. It was glistening. Even if the game was being played at sunset and into the evening, he had that lotion on his arms. He swore it was not to help for spin control, but rather to get a grip on the ball. And having been a pitcher myself, I know exactly what he's talking about. If you can't, he's claiming these baseballs, he never knows whether they're smooth,
yes,
whether that every ball is different. And the other pitchers are saying the same thing. So when you get a new ball out there, which they throw out there, seems like every other pitch, he has to go ahead now in the middle of the season where he's trained his arm to rely on a little bit of the suntan lotion on the bill of his cap, which will go ahead and take out the give him the same feel, and he can grip the ball in the manner that he's been doing all year long since he's been training since spring training. It's not that he's saying, well, you know, I'm getting away with cheating. It's just that you don't change the method in the middle of the season. And I think what's happening here is he had to grip the ball tighter. It forces your hand and your thumb to come down because he doesn't want to hit somebody with a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, okay? And I've talked to some of the pitchers. Their biggest fear is these balls are being too slick, and if they're going to throw that fast, mm-hmm, okay, and these guys have the strength now to throw 95 to 100 regularly, ball gets up and away, it's going to hurt somebody, if not kill somebody one of these days. And the batters, I think, feel the same way. When I've talked to position players, I don't think the wedge, like you said, may be driven in because the batters really aren't against the pitchers. They want to know the guy throwing 100 miles an hour at him has control of that baseball. They want to feel more comfortable at the plate. Because
that's a good point.
Think about this. They're digging in because why do they get paid to play home run derby? They don't get so they want to dig in. If you're going to hit a home run, you got to dig in at the plate and take a real rip. Well, if you're thinking about a ball coming in that may slide away and come at your head or the back of your ear or something like that, you know, I don't think they'll be as comfortable and they won't be able to hit that long ball, the exit velocity, all that stuff. Now, I think the pitchers agree that if you want to get a control over the spin control, and there's too much of that going on, you do it in the off season. You put the rule in place, and you go forward. I think it's a bad move on Manfred's part because it may have been done deliberately, like you said, to split the players up a little bit. But remember, their contract is up at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And if you drive a wedge between these ball players against management, don't be surprised if they have the upper hand because guess what? They play the game. They could walk out in September in the middle of a pennant race and say, bye-bye, you've messed with us too much, or in the offseason, we're not coming back to spring training. And it could make it very contentious next year with these negotiations. And I think there's maybe even a more sinister plan behind the scenes, maybe to get salaries down. Who knows if Manfred and Epstein, his right-arm guy now up there in New York, they want to drive a wedge so bad. Do you remember what they did to the minor leagues and reduced 160 teams
absolutely
down to 120?
Absolutely.
And they cut the draft back? Maybe they want to go ahead and get rid of some of these high salaries, drive the wedge, and then they go ahead and they bring up either scab players or they bring up players that are desperate for the minor leagues and say, okay, we're playing baseball next year and you guys can sit on the sidelines. I think there's something sinister going on behind here, and I'm tired of Manfred and I'm tired of Epstein. I know I'm ranting a little bit here, but these two guys, one guy, the commissioner, quit baseball in Little League. It's a fact. You can look it up.
Yeah.
He wanted to play tennis. He came from a country club and he wanted to play tennis, okay? At age 10 or 11, he quit Little League baseball
to go play tennis.
And Epstein was so inept at his high school, and again, look it up. This is a fact. He was hitting, because I did, he was hitting 189 his senior year at high school up in New England. The coach went to him and said, you know, we've got to get a third baseman in there that can hit and give us more production. We don't want to lose you because you're a senior. We'll make you the third base coach.
Wow.
So now we've got two stooges. I'm sorry to say stooges. Maybe I shouldn't say stooges. But we've got two guys who are not really baseball people. Two guys who are Ivy Leaguers that used to play pinball and fantasy baseball, which, you know, you can have a lot of fun playing fantasy baseball. But don't try to be a major league general manager or somebody in the big leagues who thinks they know baseball when you have never stepped on that diamond. So it's really a raw, you can tell, it's something very raw with me, yeah. And I don't like what they're doing to my game of baseball, which I love.
Well, Bob, it's not just you. I think that for baseball fans, especially those that come from the generations in which we have both, you know, been brought up, and baseball was a hallowed sort of a sport. And when you make these kinds of changes to it, it's glaring and it seems so different. The fact that the runner on second base has become such a big deal is one of the reasons why I know you're upset about it. The Milwaukee Brewers lost a game the other night without actually surrendering a hit in extra innings because, well, they had bad pitching. But it was largely due to the fact that they had a runner on second base to start. Bob Ibeck is joining the program now. If you're just joining, Bob's with me each and every Thursday, former PR director of the Cubs and a sports author. Bob, let's continue with Major League Baseball. I want to go back, though, to the Rob Manfred stuff, and I don't know that he's necessarily a stooge. I just don't think that he has got a good grip on what Major League Baseball is and could be. I also think that he is a little emasculated by Tony Clark, who was, you know, a good, not a great player when he played, but he's a good player, above average, you know, 286 hitter. I think he had 200-plus home runs. But Tony Clark's the most powerful man in baseball now, and he's the only former player, by the way, to ever be named the executive director of the Major League Baseball Players Association. I think that Rob Manfred is so afraid of Tony Clark in this upcoming offseason, he is trying to do something to drive a wedge between the players. That's what I believe, and I don't know if just the pitching substance is going to be enough to get that done. But that's what I think's happening. Do you think there's anything to the fact that Rob Manfred, being a little teeny wimp, is possibly scared of Tony Clark and actually sitting down with this man?
Well, I know he thinks the last time around that I think Selig had a pretty good edge over Tony Clark. And I think there's something to what you're saying. Tony's got his guys rallied around him. I think they'll stand. When I was covering baseball back in the 70s and the 80s and with the Cubs, I've gone through, you know, some of these discussions and off-season conversations, and I've seen strikes in baseball in my lifetime. I'll never forget what happened, what was it, 93, 94, when they walked out in the season and we didn't have the World Series.
That's right.
And Jerry Reinsdorf and Bud Selig orchestrated that. And then they realized what they had done to the fan base. Fans soured about baseball. So what happened behind the scenes? Home Run Derby, Sosa, Bonds, McGuire. And then you had the steroid era. And all that thing was that we're finding out now that was all deliberate to bring back the game and get the excitement back with the home runs that people would forget about the strike. There's some people still to this day who talk to people in Montreal who got robbed of going maybe to a World Series when they had the Expos up there and a few other ball clubs and their fan base. They have never forgiven Major League Baseball for doing that. And if Major League Baseball thinks that they're going to go ahead and pull off another strike and replace these guys, They may just kill this game, and I hate to say that because I love baseball, but they better be very careful in what they're doing and keep the harmony. I know my father when he was alive, he worked for the ALPA, the Airline Pilots Association,
okay.
And he negotiated contracts on against the pilots. Okay, and he always told me one thing: when you go into a room and you have to mediate things, and everybody's got to walk away from the negotiating table feeling like they won something. You can't strip people and make them feel like they're coming on their knees coming back because they have bosses that they have to report to. You always have to give them a carrot or something that they can hang their hat on. And I think that's the only way you get deals done. One word: compromise. You can't go in there and try to kill everybody. And I've learned that lesson in life when I've dealt with situations in my business. You can't hammer somebody so bad because, you know what, you're going to have to work with them again.
That's right. That's right. Bob Ibeck is on point as always. I know our listener, Old School, just adores having you on. As a matter of fact, Bob, that's the sentiment shared by most of our listeners. And I think that Major League Baseball, look, will baseball be around? Because I started to go a little nuclear during that 60-game season, which was absolutely so unrepresentative.
Yep.
It should never have been played. Baseball will always be around. You and I began to discuss this, though, in some brief ways last season. the players are going to eventually, if this thing with Major League Baseball somehow reaches a critical impasse and there's like no getting these two sides together, the baseball players will find other ways to play baseball. The Korean Baseball League would gladly hire them all. And we know this. ESPN will show Korean baseball. I've seen it with my own two eyes, okay? I started to get very into the Tigers last year. This thing, if it does go badly, Bob, like you mentioned, it could go badly and almost, it's not going to ruin a sport, but it could ruin a league, right? We've seen leagues come and go. It's not that the sport dissolves.
Hey, go back to the NFL and the AFL, right?
Absolutely.
Go back to the ABA and the threat that they put on the NBA.
Absolutely.
And if you really want to go back, probably before you were born, but I remember this, Branch Rickey, back in the 1950s.
The Negro Leagues.
Well, no, it was a Continental Baseball League.
Mm.
And the funny thing about it was, and I know a little bit about this history, he was going to go ahead and develop another league beside Major League Baseball and call it the Continental Baseball League. Now, many years later, you're talking to the guy right now, I was the part owner of a Continental Baseball League, an independent league ball in Texas and Louisiana. And I remember we had to make sure that we had the right to say Continental Baseball League and that he didn't have, or his family didn't have the rights to use that logo and that name. But yeah, the baseball, every one of these major leagues, and even hockey, go back to hockey too, the World Hockey Association.
I was just going to say the WHL or WHA.
So there's always right. going to be, you know, the players, like it or not, the players have the talent to play the game that the fans want to watch, and they know that they could take their ball and their bat and go and form another league, get sponsors, and bring in other people to run that league. They've got big money. A lot of these guys, can you imagine some of the top 20 players saying, all right, we're going to invest X amount of our monies that we've accrued over the years, mm-hmm. and we're going to start it up. The only thing they would have trouble finding is where do we play? Because so many of these ball clubs now are own their own stadiums. So you'd have to find other locations that would allow you to go in and stage your games. That would be the hang-up.
Well, Bob, it wouldn't be a deal breaker, and I know that sounds crazy because there's a lot of minor league parks around the country that would more than welcome these individuals in. I don't even think it would be too far of a stretch. I mean, let's just say that any of this ever happens, which I know for most of us, we wish desperately that it doesn't. But if things do go nuclear, I don't think they would even have to pony up their own cash. I think that the next in line of how sports is going to go, largely to do with gambling, you would get a casino conglomerate or an organization like William Hill.
Very good point.
That would absolutely create a league with a dynamic integrated betting system already there. This is one of the things that I caution people about. Be careful what you are willing to give away for what might replace it could be even better. And that might just, you know, you give that away if you're a business and you're thinking, they're just going to come crawling back. Not necessarily. Look at Amazon. And so many local businesses are out of business because Amazon's a better business. It is.
That's a good analysis. You know, it really is. I mean, there's people out there in business who are going to say, they'll seize the moment and they'll look at this and say, you know what, let's align ourselves with the Major League Baseball players because that's the one thing we don't have. We can't play baseball.
Right.
We don't have the entertainment factor that they do, but let's bring them on in, start another league, and, hey, play ball.
You know, Bob, it would be so devastating to many. I know the Milwaukee Brewers and your Chicago Cubs and the Cincinnati Reds. I mean, we're talking about history, history, especially with Cincinnati, who just completed that three-game sweep of our Brewers, but it wouldn't be completely unprecedented, especially in modern times. Now, Bob, before I let you go this morning, a couple of quick thoughts I would like to get from you on the NBA playoffs. Last evening, Trae Young and the Atlanta Hawks came back from 26 points down to beat the Sixers at home. I thought I was going to ask you about how big of a collapse the Milwaukee Bucks versus the Brooklyn Nets was. I don't even care about that anymore. I want to get your thoughts on that Hawks-Sixers game. Bob, what was your takeaway on that?
Well, I'll tell you, when I watched a little bit of that and saw it, I mean, the big guy in the middle, he's hurt. He can't play for Philly. I mean, he's just standing there. He can't jump anymore. And I think they're done. And this is, having worked in Philadelphia as a sports editor years ago at the Philadelphia Journal, I know how much Philadelphia fans can get down on a ball club if you're not winning and you lose. I've seen it happen with the Eagles, the Phillies. even with the Flyers there. So the Sixers are no exception. I think Atlanta with Young, they've got him where they want him. I think the Clippers have come back really nice against the Jazz, and I was stunned too. But you never count out the Nets even when they're hurting because of Mr. Durant. 49 points the other night against the Bucks. I thought the Bucks had that game in hand at halftime.
So did I.
And then the comeback. So I don't know. I mean, maybe the Bucks come back and win Game 6. But Game 7, Durant will carry that team on his back. It's going to take a monumental effort for them to win this thing now, to win the last two games. I think, you know, and of course, Phoenix is well-rested. They're just sitting back there. So I think when you look at this, you could easily be looking at Brooklyn against Phoenix,
sure.
Maybe the Clippers. I mean,
I don't know without Kawhi Leonard though. I mean, Paul George played hero ball last night with 37. The Jazz are really up against it without Mike Connolly and Chris Paul. I mean, he's in the COVID protocol. We're all hoping that he gets out of that soon. I was looking over. I'm going to put this together for an article later this afternoon, Bob, online at WKTYSports.com. With our friend John Denton, who is a sports betting insider, the Atlanta Hawks right now are a plus 1,800 team to win the championship. The Phoenix Suns plus 350 and the Bucks plus 700. These three teams are amongst the healthiest remaining teams in the NBA postseason. And because of that, I think there's some really good value. I've said this for quite a number of days now, or actually weeks, as the postseason has continued on. The Atlanta Hawks are showing up and showing out. They've already gotten a star turn from Trae Young in the first round versus the Knicks when he went absolutely crazy.
Oh, yeah.
And Trae Young, he is becoming a legitimate superstar right before our eyes. The playoffs, Bob, and you know this, the playoffs are where you make your mark. This is where Hall of Fame careers are defined. That's why Kevin Durant's game the other night, 49, 17, and 10, is going to be a career-defining game for him, regardless of how the series turns out. But I think the Hawks right now, and I've said this for a while, are a bad matchup for most all NBA teams because they can shoot. They got an incredible defense, especially with Nate McMillan as a coach, and they've got a lot of length on that team. It's a very, very rangy team, and I like that Atlanta plus 1,800. I mean, if you throw $100 on there, I mean, might as well. You'd be looking good.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. They are healthy, and Trae Young is a special player.
Sure,
I love watching him play. Nobody on that court can defend him, but I still don't count out the Warrior. No pun intended, in Kevin Durant, because that guy is something else.
That's,
I mean,
amazing.
He's big time. He reminds me a little bit of what Michael Jordan did during the 6 years that the Bulls reigned over the NBA. He takes a team on his back and can carry you, and he's an amazing athlete. As long as he stays healthy, I think Brooklyn's going to be still a team to be reckoned with. We'll find that out. I think the Bucks can win Game 6.
I do too.
Game 7 should be a classic, and you never know. I mean, you roll the ball out there and strange things happen.
Yeah, no doubt. And if Kevin Durant can stay healthy, like you mentioned, that's still a big if. I think that he is always going to be the most dangerous player, at least when LeBron James isn't on the court, probably each and every night. Bob, I appreciate your time this morning. It's great getting a chance to talk to you. I know our audience is just absolutely enthralled with your stories, and I think your rant was great. I can't wait for this to be on the Overtime Podcast, which, by the way, you got to listen.
I hope I didn't rant too much, but passionate I am about baseball. I love it. I followed it since 1956. My first game was Don Larsen's perfect game.
Wow.
And I was telling my son, I kept my streak going alive. I've seen at least one Major League game in every year since 1956. Last year, I had to take it to the end because with no fans being allowed, I was only able to see the World Series games down in Texas. If the Rays hadn't got to the World Series, my streak would have ended.
Yeah, that's right, and you did get a chance to go down there in Texas. Well, Bob, listen, I'm going to email you later. You got to download this thing from the Google Cloud, but that's where I'm sending our segments, okay? They're too large to send through an email file, but they come to your AOL account on that Google Cloud. So later on, I'll have that to you, and it's always so much fun.
So what you're telling me is I'm going to be in the cloud later today,
you're in
right?
the cloud. You're in the cloud already. I just don't think you've ever gone to the cloud, but Bob,
I hope it's not too foggy up there.
No, it's fine. It's going to be partly sunny, but it's all right. Bob, as always, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again next Thursday.
All right. You have a great day and a better weekend coming
up. You too, big guy. All right.